Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, January 2nd. Looking for clues. Crime scene techs, determined, dedicated. The story was written by Kim Smith. When Cynthia Gomez was a senior in high school, a prominent Odessa couple was stabbed to death. She saw crime scene techs spend hours at the scene collecting evidence. She knew then what she wanted to do for a living. The man suspected of killing Dick and Peggy Glover was convicted of capital murder and sentenced to 3 life terms without the possibility of parole in November 2012. Among the things linking James Burwell to the scene, fingerprints and bloody boots. Gomez now spends her days dusting for finger and palm prints, photographing crime scenes and collecting blood and other evidence as a crime scene technician with the Odessa Police Department. She recently testified during a high-profile aggravated kidnapping and aggravated assault case in Ector County District Court. When fully staffed, Crime Scene Unit Supervisor Stephanie Bothwell has 10 employees working under her. In addition to 6 crime scene techs, she has 3 property technicians who are responsible for logging evidence in and out and making sure it remains secure when it's not being analyzed or used in court. She also has a clerk. Bothwell, who described her staff as dedicated people with a lot of fortitude, is retiring January 17th. Quote, "They are determined to do the best job they can to tell the story, and they know they may have to testify one day," Bothwell said. "They know what they do has value and may mean someone may get justice or may not get justice based on what they do," end quote. Because they are often dealing with victims on what may be the worst day of their lives, crime scene techs need to be circumspect and respectful, but they also have to find ways to prevent themselves from crying, and that sometimes means sharing a joke with colleagues, Bothwell said. Although all of the crime scene techs can be summoned at any minute of the day or night, they typically rotate every 2 weeks between 3 different shifts, 6 a.m. to 3 p.m., 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. Monday through Friday. Those assigned to the late shift are on call after hours and during the weekend. Fans of the CSI shows may immediately think of murder scenes when it comes to techs, but they also are called to assaults, burglaries, thefts, robberies, and serious car wrecks, Bothwell said. Some scenes could require 1 tech, others all 6 of them, Bothwell said. Everyone was called out on Odessa's mass shooting because they were dealing with so many crime scenes, but also all techs could be called out to collect fingerprints if multiple cars are burglarized at 1 location, she explained. Her techs also help out smaller agencies and the Texas Rangers on occasion, she said. Every so often, she finds herself out in the field, too. She went to a gunshot victim call that turned into a homicide case in the spring. Every piece of evidence collected receives a barcode, Bothwell said. In 2019, the year before COVID-19 struck, 26,263 barcodes were created. Through early December, that number was 13,241 for 2022. Bothwell said, unlike what you see on CSI, much of the evidence her techs collect is actually sent to other labs. For example, blood for DNA is sent elsewhere, and forensic science experts study blood splatter to recreate crime scenes. Most crimes aren't solved in an hour either, although recently two of her colleagues were discussing two separate burglary cases and realized within an hour the prints from both matched, Bothwell said. Each state has an automated fingerprint identification system, and the FBI maintains an integrated AFIS, Bothwell said. From 1926 to 1946, the FBI collected 100 million fingerprints, and by 1971, they had 200 million prints. Nowadays, they have more than 56.8 million people in the system. Gomez quickly learned that, unlike what you see on TV, it's not always easy to find fingerprints that can be used for comparison purposes. A lot of it depends on the surface being dusted and other factors. In fact, in less than 10% of the cases involving shell casings can usable prints be found, she said. It's much easier to find usable prints on smooth surfaces like glass and windows. Back in 1995, Bothwell was working at Strike It Rich Bingo when the security officers suggested she apply for a job as a police dispatcher. The job was already closed when she went to the city, but a crime scene tech position was open. When she applied, her husband said it was the perfect job for her because she had a nosy nature. When she was hired, she thought she was going to be logging in evidence, but she was given the opportunity to go through all sorts of training pertaining to evidence collection. She feels very fortunate, she said. While you might assume her staff all have degrees in science or criminal justice, that's not the case. Quote, "We don't require a degree to come here. We'll educate them and get them prepared," Bothwell said. Over the years, she's met crime scene techs without a formal education who remain in the business and others with formal educations who quickly abandon the profession. Quote, "You can have someone with all of the education in the world, but when it comes down to it, they can't handle the smells and the sights," Bothwell said. Crime scene techs don't get to pick the environment they're working in either. Quote, "They're feeling the elements. They're out there in the wind and the cold. They're dealing with flies and the discomfort of the emotions at the scene," Bothwell said. The great thing about OPD is it has a peer support group for employees when it's needed, she said. Quote, "People do mean things to themselves and to each other, and over time that can wear on you," Bothwell said. Although she's been at it for so long, Bothwell said she still looks forward to getting to work every day. Quote, "It's been very rewarding," she said. Stick with those new resolutions. The story was written by Carol A. Keats, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. "I never used to be superstitious. I was married on Friday the 13th, for instance. But 30 years of nursing has changed that. I hate to say it, but I am superstitious at this point. Now, even though the scientist part of me just cringes, I knock on wood, I refuse to say the word quiet or bored within the walls of the hospital, and I fully believe in the power of a full moon. I believe Murphy's Law is not only real, it is pretty much a guarantee. Because of that, I now do a bunch of the good fortune for the New Year traditions on New Year's Eve and day. We eat black-eyed peas, along with several other round foods. I make sure to watch the ball drop in Times Square. I kiss my spouse and kids, and I always make a resolution, not that I am always good about keeping them." New Year's resolutions are a very old tradition. They started in ancient Babylonia over 4,000 years ago. The resolutions of the Babylonians were mostly about paying off debt and returning borrowed items. The Romans also made New Year's resolutions with promises to one of their gods, Janus, that they would behave better. New Year's resolution traditions here in the U.S. continue, with about 40% of us setting resolutions each year. Of those people who set resolutions, about half make just one resolution, while the other half makes several resolutions. Young people are more likely to make resolutions than older people, with people under 30 being 3 times more likely to make resolutions than those over age 55. Parents are also more likely to make resolutions than people without children. Resolutions are most commonly health-based, with weight loss, quitting smoking, reducing drinking, and exercising more falling as the top 4 resolutions. Interestingly, COVID also affected New Year's resolutions. There has been a shift in resolutions since the pandemic toward better mental health, better eating habits, and better financial management than in years past. Other common resolutions center around career goals, spending less time on social media, starting new hobbies, home renovations, and doing more charity work. Unfortunately, resolutions are easy to make, but they are very hard to keep. 43% of people who make resolutions state they expect to fail before January ends. Almost 1 in 4 people fail in the resolution within the first 7 days of January. 64% fail by the end of January. Only 9% of people keep their resolution for the full year. One statistic I found a bit mind-blowing is that most people break their resolution on the second Friday of January. It is so common that many gyms and fitness and diet apps refer to that as Quitter's Day. Experts believe that so many resolutions fail because people make them because they should, not because they are truly committed. 35% of people say lack of motivation is why they stop keeping their resolution. I would guess that is why far fewer older people make resolutions too. Experience has taught them why bother when they know they are likely to fail. Success at keeping New Year's resolutions is more likely when you understand why you want to change, because that is where motivation lives. People who understand that they will have setbacks and bounce back are also more likely to be successful. People who maintain their New Year's resolutions for 2 years statistically have at least 14 setbacks on their journey. Persistence is a big part of keeping a resolution. For myself, health is generally where my resolutions fall too, and most years I fail horribly. In 2022, however, I did achieve my resolution to lose weight, and I am proud of that. I am down over 50 pounds from New Year's Day of 2022. I am not quite to my goal, however, so that will be my resolution this year, to hit my goal weight and to keep it off. I hope I am successful again this year. I am certainly working toward that goal. If you make a resolution, I hope you are successful as well. Regardless, if you do or don't make New Year's resolutions, or if you succeed or don't succeed in any resolutions you make, I wish you a safe, happy, and healthy 2023. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Water and energy. The University of Texas Permian Basin's Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference is scheduled February 28th to March 2nd. On February 28th, a welcome reception is scheduled at UTPB's College of Engineering building. March 1st is the first day of conference sessions at the Midland County Horseshoe, with a keynote dinner at the Petroleum Club of Midland. March 2nd is day 2 of conference sessions at the Horseshoe. XTO Energy is the title sponsor. Diamondback Energy is also a platinum sponsor. Register for the conference at waterinenergy.com. Sandhills Stock Show and Rodeo. The Sandhills Stock Show and Rodeo will take place from January 4th to 14th, 2023, at 218 West 46th Street. There will be rodeo performances, roping, a livestock show, and more. Visit sandhillssr.com. Piano Competition. The Odessa Music Teachers Association has scheduled the Jack Hendricks Piano Competition from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. January 21st, 2023, and from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. January 22nd at the Odessa College Jack Rogers Fine Arts Center at 201 West University Boulevard. Any piano student ages K through 12 and even college students are welcome to participate as long as your teacher sends your info and the $12 fee to OMTA. Entry deadline is January 9th. Visit tinyurl.com/BDEAW6B3. Citizen of the Year. The Odessa Chamber of Commerce wants to know who deserves to be Citizen of the Year. The Citizen of the Year for 2022 will be selected based on the quality and effectiveness of volunteer work performed for the good of the community. Volunteer efforts to be considered as examples of community service include the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, church, civic clubs, local government, education, and charitable or service organizations. All citizens of Odessa and Ector County are eligible to submit nominations and/or receive this award. The 2022-2023 Chair of the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, Grayson Hankins, and previous recipients of this award are not eligible but may submit nominations. Nominations must be submitted by Tuesday.
Odessa American, published Saturday, December 31st, 2022. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. How much aspirin is okay to use? Dear Dr. Roach, my shoulder pain seems to be getting worse, lack of cartilage, and it is interfering with sleep. I haven't taken any main pain medication for it, but I read that the best relief is from either aspirin or ibuprofen. I'd like to switch them back and forth, maybe 2 or 3 days with aspirin, then 1 day with ibuprofen. The most I can tolerate being 200 to 300 milligrams a day. How much aspirin is okay to use this way? Answer. I recommend against the combination of a medicine like ibuprofen or naproxen like Aleve and aspirin. They have similar toxicities and work nearly in the same way, so you don't get much more, if any, pain relief, and instead increase the risk of kidney and stomach damage. The combination of aspirin or an anti-inflammatory drug like ibuprofen with acetaminophen, Tylenol, is commonly used and can lead to improved pain relief without a big toxicity risk when taken in the recommended doses.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, December 31st, 2022. Dear Abby, couple struggle to adapt to an unfamiliar reality. Dear Abby, my husband was the love of my life. I lost him to COVID 8 months ago. We were together for 20 years. I know without a doubt that my husband loved me, but during our marriage, he had several affairs. He was always sorry for his indiscretions and would shower me with gifts and vacations in the aftermath. I was able to forgive him for all his affairs except the last one. It was with a tramp from our church, and it damn near ended our marriage. In fact, I told him to get out, and we were done. He begged me to change my mind and swore this was the last time. I agreed to stay, but things were never the same. We left our church because of my embarrassment about their affair, so we lost our friends. My problem is, since his passing, I have become very angry all over again. I'm furious at him for this affair and dream about ripping the face off the church lady. How do I let go of this anger so I can grieve the loss of my husband and remember the love and good times we shared instead of this nasty affair? Missing my man in South Carolina. Dear Missing, I'm glad you wrote because it's important you give yourself the opportunity to vent about your feelings. A constructive way to do that would be to talk with a licensed therapist or with your spiritual advisor. Did you ever discuss your reason for leaving the church you loved with the pastor there? If you didn't, that might be a place to start. You also mentioned that in leaving, you left behind valued friendships. It may be time to renew them. And please, stop feeling embarrassed because of your husband's transgression. He was weak, and he was human. And the sooner you can accept that, the sooner your rage may lessen. Dear Abby, my 80-ish mother has always considered herself an artist, although her paintings are bad at best. She insists on gifting paintings at major events and also insists that the honorees unwrap the painting in front of guests. At a recent classy wedding, she insisted the bride and groom open her gift, although doing it at a wedding isn't usually done. The bride and groom were angry and embarrassed, as were the bridal party and guests. The painting was atrocious, and my oblivious mother beamed and grinned and took a bow. She does this at most weddings and events, and I'm mortified each time. The recipients are, without exception, visibly uncomfortable and even angry that she attempts to steal their limelight. Mother doesn't notice. This isn't dementia. She has always been an attention hog and narcissist. I reached the point that I'm going to avoid any events she is attending. I have begged her not to do this, but she claims I'm just trying to stifle her creativity, and that she's a gifted artist. Abby, people are laughing behind her back. How do I stop her from doing this? Mortified in Michigan. Dear Mortified, your mother's craving for attention is not a reflection on you. You have tried to warn her. Now it's time to let it go. She isn't going to stop until one of the future recipients reacts by telling her honestly in front of everyone exactly what they think of her masterpiece.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.